Welcome to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast all about stories of safety leadership, presented by Dale Carnegie and the Board of Certified Safety Professionals.
We have an opportunity to hear from somebody who started their safety journey as a volunteer with a firefighter group and how it progressed through the years.
Yeah, and I'm curious to hear more about that background myself because I didn't know that little tidbit. But we've got John Whalen with us today. And I'm really excited to have him with all of us today.
So, John, how in the world did a guy like you get into wanting to be involved with firefighting?
Yeah, that was kind of a weird one-off just roadmap that I took. I was 16 years old and I was in high school at the time. And I was looking for something, I think, a little more adventurous than what I was finding amongst my high school. We had, I think it was probably about 3,000 students total. And, I had done the extracurricular activities, but I was looking for, I'd say, more excitement in my life. And so just on a whim, I went by our volunteer fire department and I was like, hey, can I join? And they said, are you 16? I said, yeah. And they said, yeah, absolutely. And
that's all it took in 16.
You're in. 16, you're in.
I don't know what that says about the fire department, that brought me in, but they sent me to the same training course that they would send the other adults to. So I would go to school during the day, and then at night I would go, I think it was three times a week. I would do two nights during the week, and then one on the weekend we'd have a full day of training. And I did that for, I think, 3 months. And after 3 months, I was released as a probationary junior volunteer. So the only thing I couldn't do was go into burning buildings, but everything else I could do. So,
for example, other things you could do, what did that include?
Jaws of life. So 16 years old, went to high school during the day. Then afternoon, I have my, little pager on me from the fire department. The tones go off. I, of course, go to the fire department, get on the truck, bunker gear and all. And, sometimes it was just me and the officer in charge, and it was us leading the scene. So 16-year-old, and of course they were providing the oversight at the time, but, go ahead and, we're going to cut here on the car. We need to avoid this. We need to put the airbag protector to stop it from deploying, coming out. So, it was a really, I think, exciting, experience, more so because no one else in my high school was part of that either. So it was, there was things that would make the news, and I was on the news that night wearing my shirt and then back at school the next day.
Now this sounds like, Clark Kent and Superman,
sure
business student by day and rescuer by.
Yeah, no, it was really exciting. I'm very fortunate for, I think, all of the training, and the experiences that I got from that. And what I really enjoyed was the chaos of the emergency and then watching it slowly restore order or, get it to a point where you could have the other people come in and take over from that point, whether that was the EMS crew coming in because we got there before them, whether that was the law enforcement officers after that, or even remediation for cleaning up after a fire. Our job was to stabilize and normalize, and then we would let other professionals come in. So it was a great opportunity for me to really, I think, learn about emergency services. That was also my first, experience with policies, procedures, standard operating procedures. I don't think any 16-year-old that's not actively working would, really have experience or insight to those types of documents. So I was fascinated that everything, there was a process to do everything and this is how we did it. So, that was a great opportunity for me. I'd say at 16, when I turned 18, I was released full-fledged volunteer firefighter. And,
to go into burning buildings.
Yeah, to go into burning buildings then. So.
Was there any particular event that you look back on that was memorable for you? You really felt like, wow, I made a difference? Anything like that that just stood out to you?
I would say the ones you're responding to, they're grateful when you show up. There's a reason they called you, and again, they're looking to you to provide that either level of comfort, that knowledge, or at least to help stabilize and again restore that order, whether that's a person that's injured or again something, property damage, car accident, house on fire, so that's one aspect of it. I think for me though, what really sticks out are probably the ones that weren't wins. As weird as that may sound, but that's where I learned a lot of my, I would say, background in general. A lot of the training opportunities, you know, we did one at a sewage plant that was undergoing construction. And I was fortunate enough to just kind of be with the, I would say, the district commander at the time. And I watched all the crews come in. And so one by one, an ambulance crew would walk up to an open pit. The, you know, the commander would say, all right, lay down next to that pit. You know, there's hydrogen sulfide in that pit and, you know, you've just succumbed to it. And so in my head, I was like, oh, wow, you know, I didn't even think of that ahead of time. So those were the experiences that I think really helped instill a lot of the foundational background that I come to know today, thinking about the what ifs or did you consider this aspect?
One of the things that I think is very intriguing, you made a choice as a 16-year-old that helped in some ways guide what you would do through your life work.
Yep.
And I'm just curious from your thought, though. Sometimes we think, well, that's just for 16-year-olds, 19-year-olds, kids. How much do you suppose for the average safety professional, the normal safety professional, decisions they make along the way can continue to have a huge effect in their life going forward?
I definitely think the opportunity, I would say, is probably the ability to look back and say, like, okay, what can I take away from this experience? And that's what I'm truly grateful for. Because, again, I think had I just kind of started off into safety, I wouldn't have a lot of that foundational knowledge. And I would have been really greener starting off in the very beginning. I was still green as it was when I, you know, once I, you know, started working on my ASP and then go into my CSP. But I think in the terms of having the background of, you know, what is a standard operating procedure? What are variances when you have to go against that standard operating procedure? You know, again, if you think about emergency services, you could be responding to an incident you have no insight to. Are there chemicals being released? You know, what's happening? What's the, you know, the integrity of the structure? And so being able to look back on that and piece it together now, I think in my career helps keep me, I think, focused on what we need to do to, you know, I think continue growing and building upon that foundation.
And then just to, for all our folks that are listening, for everybody, we all have these opportunities to grow, and there are situations that come up. You volunteered for that. If you hadn't volunteered, I'm sure your life would have been fine.
Yeah.
But you never know, folks, when you have those chances there. Be willing to raise your hand and say, yeah, I'll try that. I'll help out of that. I'll take on that, because it can open up doors, or you said.
Yep, 100%. And, you know, I, even in my role today, I still am, you know, one of the ones that throw my hands up, you know, like, okay, this may not be fully in my scope, but let us see what we can do to collaborate. And, you know, the one piece of advice that I'd always recommend is make sure your manager's aligned with it, you know. But again, if you have the capacity, I think, to provide that support, insight, or guidance, I always encourage, because I think that's where those opportunities really come from.
So I heard you talk about the hydrogen sulfide example, the training example.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you know, to this podcast, there are a lot of young safety professionals that are listening as well. And one of the things that I speak to a lot of young safety professionals about is the fact that it's okay to make mistakes. And that a lot of the time, that's when you have some of the greatest learning moments and when you can really grow to the next level. So maybe talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I think that's a topic that I would encourage every health and safety professional to really be true to. I think honesty, admitting when you may, something may be out of your scope, or you may not have that full set of skill set to actually accomplish that task. I think where I learned a lot of that was starting off in the fire department. You know, those are records. You shouldn't forge records. You shouldn't say, well, I really did this instead. You know, I've seen some of my colleagues at the time get called to court because of what they put in their reports. And so, again, as a 16-year-old, I don't want to go to court. I don't want to be involved in any of this. I just want to go out there, you know, provide service to the community, get that experience, and you know, be part of that community. So that's where I think I really instilled a lot of the, if you mess up, own it. Be honest, because either way, it's going to come out in the wash one way or another. And, you know, eventually I transitioned into the medical field. Again, same thing. Those records could be subpoenaed. They could end up in a court case. You know, they could be part of a fraud case. So I was very, mindful of, you know, what I was capable of doing and what I was not capable of doing. And so I also have never had a problem saying, hey, I'm not familiar with this. I am not the right resource for this, but I would love to learn more.
Dale Carnegie principle that you were putting into practice there was he said, if you're wrong, admit it quickly and emphatically.
Yep.
And that takes humility to be willing to do that. And John, for many of us, we're a bit afraid. We're trying to establish ourselves as a leader. And, oh, man, if I have to admit I don't know or I'm wrong, what's that going to do to my image?
Yep.
What do you think about that?
I think that's going to be vital for growth. Because if you can't do that, then you're always going to be defensive of, well, I was right and they weren't. I think kind of going back to what you had asked about was when supporting my customers, if I'm not that knowledgeable person, I'll ask them like, hey, you know, I consider you the SME of what you're doing here. Can you tell me about it? Mm-hmm. You know, again, I want to ask that question as opposed to come in and saying, hey, I noticed you don't have your PPE on or you don't have this set up. You're not doing this right. Because again, I wasn't there for that full setup, for that full, you know, review. I may have just walked in on part of that. So I'm a big believer of collaborating, asking questions, not coming in, you know, I would say like guns blazing, like this is what we're going to do and this is the way you have to do it. You know, again, if this is a customer that I'm supporting, then I need to make sure that they are able to do their job successfully. They can do it, you know, ensure they're in compliance, whether that's with regulation or with company standards.
You made a great point. You know, sometimes individuals' context drives their behavior. And so you mentioned, you know, you may not fully understand the reasonings why they did what they did.
Yeah.
But coming to that understanding and, you know, maybe they didn't have the right resources available at all or the right PPE or the right equipment. So I think that's a really valuable perspective.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing that we can do as safety professionals is, again, listen to our customers. Tell me your challenge. What is happening that I'm not seeing or that's making this harder for you? And how can we solve this challenge for you? And that's what I've done. When I worked in the power generation industry, there were challenges with working from heights. They were taking A-frame ladders and leaning them against the wall to get into tight spaces. And, you know, every time, why are we doing this? Well, we don't want to take down the stalls in the bathroom to have to be able to access. It's just quicker if we do it this way. And it finally got to the point where I reached out to a local retailer and I said, hey, bring every type of lifting device ladder that you possibly can to this facility. I said, the crew here will have their purchase cards. If you can sell them a device that is legally approved to be used and they can get their job done, they will buy it. And they actually brought various types of ladders, A-frame ladders that are designed to be leaned in tight spaces. You know, they're compliant with the standard at that point because they were designed specifically for that. So, again, I think a lot of it is connecting to, you know, to the resources that we are aware of, but then also understanding the challenges that our customers or the ones that we support face.
Because what kind of pushback do safety professionals get when they leap in to a situation as Captain America, telling everybody what to do, but they don't really understand?
Yeah. Yeah. And I call that doing it in a vacuum. You know, again, if I have a policy and procedure, and this has actually happened to me before, the company I worked for at the time, they went out to a consulting agency. They purchased all these health and safety policies and procedures. And they said, okay, this is the one you're assigned, John. Take this back to the fleet management team and have them adopt it. And I looked at that. I said, they're never going to do this. I said, they didn't write this. I said, they don't want this document. And they're like, well, they have to take it. And I said, okay, let me try my approach, you know. And so,
which was
to go to the director of fleet management and said, you know, I sat down and said, hey, you know, we need to develop a improved standard. We have something in the works, but I want to make sure that your team has the ability to provide that input, you know. And again, I went straight back to the customer and sought their input. I told them, I'm doing a lot of the heavy lifting. You're just telling me whether this is right and wrong for your team. You know, yes, I want your input. You're going to review this. You're going to have this, but I'm going to be the one to write out the roles and responsibilities. I'm going to be the one to, you know, to go through and make sure everything's formatted. I just need you to approve whether you want this content or not, or if we're missing something, flag it for me so that we can make sure that we, you know, that we do include it.
So it's interesting, you know, what I think I heard you talk about, and especially again, coming back to some of the younger safety professionals, I was having a flashback moment of, you know, you come right out of school, you're a young safety professional, and you want to look like you know it all. And so in my head, you know, you're talking about your fleet employees. If you came out as the young safety professional, do you think they knew that you didn't know the type of work that they did?
Yes. Yes. I can say that with confidence. Yes. 100% yes. At the power generation company, I supported our corporate operations, which was, I think, facility management, fleet, you know, and all the corporate buildings that we had. So that was, I think, over 90 buildings for 2,000 employees total in the whole organization. So this was a state-run agency, but that team was very quick to be able to point out if I didn't know something. And so my response back to them was literally what I've been talking about. I encouraged them to call me on what I didn't know, to educate me. And so I told them, I said, you know, if I walk into your construction site and I didn't sign that job safety analysis or review it, you have every right to kick me out. You know, and so they loved that. They were empowered to say, okay, John, you walked into our space, get out. You didn't review that document, or you don't have your proper PPE on. And so that's how we really started, I think, the relationship of, I'm a partner, I'm not an enemy. I'm not here to tell your boss you're not wearing the proper PPE or that you don't have your barricade set up. A lot of it was, I want to make sure you're protected. I want to make sure the company's protected. You know, it's easy if we can have these conversations and I think, you know, come to the understanding of why this was done or why this wasn't done.
So through your experience, which way do you think you had the greater success with your teammates, your partners, your customers? Mm-hmm. By telling them or through by partnering with them?
Partnership, 100%. even to this day, in my current role, I view everything as a partnership, internal and external. Because again, if I start going against the grain and I create that resistance, it's just going to spread. And we're not going to be able to move forward and solve that challenge. So I think a lot of, you know, the reason I feel like I can be successful in my support and what I do is because of that collaboration. It's understanding. It's, okay, what is their perspective? You know, are they working 14-hour days and now the safety guy's coming in and saying, okay, well, you got to spend an extra 15 minutes just to prepare for this job and an extra 20 just to wrap up the job now. If that's the case, then what can we do to maybe alleviate, you know, provide, you know, maybe new technology or new devices to help make this a little easier, safer, and so that we can be compliant?
This is a different approach, John, because many folks just are very knowledgeable of regulations. They say, this is it, do it. And I don't believe you're trying to get around the regulations or ignore them, but you're going at a whole different way that it seems like people are more open to it.
And you mean don't just go out and say, OSHA says you have to?
Yeah, no.
Or pull out the manual and say, well, look at this.
Because how does you suppose the average frontline employee feels about an OSHA regulation? I know you're just maybe guessing, but
I think I have a good feeling. I see these memes online, you know, how'd you get the job done so quickly? OSHA, you know, OSHA violations. And I laugh because I'm like, oh, that probably does happen a lot. It doesn't have to happen. You know, I think if you look at a lot of what the core of the regulations and standards are, even some of the guidance that they offer, that, you know, I think understanding really what translates into actual versus, you know, okay, is this more, you know, and I, the one I always pick on is energy isolation, you know, doing the annual inspection of your authorized user. So every year you go through that, you know, check, are they doing this to our company standards? Do they know how to do this? Yes. Okay. We're confirming that we're doing this still. You know, I think I see a lot of companies that may not do that, you know, and again, is this coming down to a lack of knowledge? Do they know that they're supposed to do this, you know, every year for their authorized users, or, you know, is this something that they blatantly overlook? So I think coming back, taking a step back, evaluating the applicability of the regulations, the industry that you're working in. Again, if this occurred in an open face mine, that's not going to be OSHA. You know, it could be the same equipment, but that could be a different regulating industry. So a lot of what I do is I take that step back and say, okay, construction or general industry, and then I kind of go from there, you know, and again, it comes back to the conversations. Hey, I noticed that, you know, we didn't do this check that we're supposed to do, you know, is there a reason why, you know, and that's where I usually find out, was this, you know, a blocker stopping them from being able to complete this, or was this something that they weren't informed about, or, you know, maybe they just didn't see the value in it.
And it sounds like what you were doing there is you were certainly trying to give a benefit of the doubt, rather than which really fits in with the principle of do not criticize, condemn, or complain.
Yep.
And when we go in with folks who are not doing it right with the spirit of judgmental and condemning, well, that gets a pushback.
Yeah.
We used to call it emotional heartburn that was festering within somebody. And we wonder what's wrong with those people. It's all our approach.
Yep.
So you sound like you even came in to say, maybe they just, like your ladder situation, maybe they didn't know about the other types of ladder, or they just hadn't given consideration of that. So rather than just busting them, you went with a much better holistic approach.
Yeah. And I think by the time I was getting ready to leave that company, the actual satisfaction I got was I had the 600 customers that I was responsible for that were, you know, within my facilities department and corporate entities. They were calling me and texting me on the cell phone. Hey, I tried to lock out our sprinkler on campus and I can't, you know, get it locked out. And I was like, what are you trying to lock out the sprinkler for? But they were so empowered to try to lock out everything at that point. They're like, well, you know, we're going to be working on it. And I'm like, is it high pressure? And they're like, no. And I'm like, is there electrical? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, like turn the valve off, you know, but something as simple as that, it empowered them to take ownership and safety. And that's why I say, I am not the SME of any construction, ongoing construction designs. Everything's going to change. That all changes. And so I think what I can do is make sure that we are supported. Are we compliant with regulations first and foremost? Are we compliant with standards, company standards? Because every company is going to have different tolerances for what they will allow or what they don't want to allow. So, you know, that's really my approach in understanding. And then again, I love a good problem to solve. You know, I had no idea about the A-frame ladders that you could lean until I called that company. Like, tell me about every device you have working at Heights. They said, we have all this. And I think they probably brought out about 15 different types of ladders that day.
So one of the ways that we met is through dealing with contractor safety. And I know that's a role you're currently in. If you could tell us and all the listeners, you know, what it is that you really enjoy about working with contractor safety.
This has been a fascinating, I would say, role for me because nothing is the same. All contractors are different. All contractors have a different way of approaching things. So are we talking, you know, general contractors? Are we talking trade civil contractors, equipment providers that come in and do like commissioning to make sure the equipment, you know, is rated for what was spec to us? All of those, it's very insightful to be able to kind of see how they operate their EHS system. And then ensure that they're set up for success when they go to one of our projects, I would say more so. You know, so if we're looking at it like that, again, helping them be able to scale for what we're doing, understand our requirements. You know, I think every company has their own internal requirements. Some are more stringent than others. Again, how do we take a, I would say, a minimalist company who's just meeting the minimum regulatory requirements and get them to be able to scale, for large operations or to be able to handle multiple projects in multiple geographies. So it's I would say it's a constant, I don't want to call it a challenge. It's fun for me to be able to say, okay, this is what we can anticipate, or this is what we can expect as part of this. And these are the support mitigation controls we need to implement to ensure that we are successful.
So over the years, I've noticed with contractor safety in particular, I spent 20 years on the owner side, and then I've also been on the contractor side. I've noticed that owners can often approach it in kind of one of two ways. They can approach it as, you're a contractor, you're not my worker, I'm going to look the other way, you do your work, come in and do your job, and leave. And then there's owners who approach it as a partnership and a valued partnership approach. What's your thought on that?
I am definitely a value partnership because again, if I go to one of our projects and I start telling a contractor again, and whether it's a general contractor to a equipment provider, if I start telling them how to do their jobs or why this, they're not doing it the right way, I'm just going to start rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. And we are not going to be successful. We are not going to have a partnership because they're going to be like, oh, here comes John again. He's going to tell me how I don't know my own job. And they're the ones who hired me, So I always like to make sure that our stakeholders are informed, make sure those open lines of communication, make sure your contractors can talk up that chain of command because they have people they report to. So information doesn't always, I would say, flow back to the person you want it to, but you do need to make sure that you have those conversations and that I think you're being respectful. You're giving them the opportunity to provide their subject matter expert. Again, it's always deferring back to them. Tell me why we're doing this, or how did this happen? Did we consider this? And again, it's not got you moments. It's really to start those dialogues and conversations so that, again, root cause analysis. How did we end up here? And let's kind of start working backwards to try something different.
I hear in your words, in your approach, such a respect for people.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Great minds really do run together. How did you learn that?
A lot of it was from the hospital. Again,
now, tell us just a little more about that.
Yeah. After I was in the fire department, I had transitioned. I took a sidestep out of safety and got into radio and TV, and I did that for 4 years. Again, just a complete different industry. That was probably a podcast of its own there. But I got laid off in, I think it was 2009, and one of my contacts from the fire department was actually the director of the emergency room at one of our local hospitals. And she said, hey, John, I know you're also a scuba diver. We're opening up hyperbaric chambers. Would you want to come, do this? She knew I was looking for work. And again, I knew hyperbaric chambers for scuba diving, but not in the sense of medical treatments. So I was like, yeah, again, I knew nothing about it. They sent me to the school. I did that. And I had the ability to kind of start that program there. And so at that location, I was the hyperbaric technician. Medicare, Medicaid required, if you get funding from them, they would require certain positions like a safety director. And that's probably just more so a title, for that. But the basics was, making sure you had equipment checks, that you had emergency response procedures developed. You had a way to, monitor life while you're giving the treatment, make sure your patients are, because again, a lot of that's just going to be sitting there ensuring safety for the next 2 hours or 2 hour treatment. So having the ability, I'd say, to start that, that again was part of the safety aspect, but going to different patients' rooms, they're in pain. They don't want to do what I want them to do. I need to try to get them up out of bed. We need to get them into treatment. They're like, no, I don't want this. I've seen patients who have offensive tattoos. I cannot treat them any different than my own, than my own family. I have to treat everyone the same. So regardless whether my views aligned with them, whether they called me names, which happened on multiple occasions, again, I always had to set myself in their perspective. Why are they in the hospital? They're not here for a vacation. Something's wrong. And it's trying to understand, work with them, and really get them, I think, motivated to want to try to do something. So that's where I think a lot of my foundation of trying to work with people, not take it personal. Again, at end of the day, I go home. They're still at the hospital. You know, they may be there the next day. They may not. I don't, you know, I may not know what happens to them. So it was just one of those. It really set things in perspective for me that, again, regardless of how they talk to you, take it, release it somewhere else, not to them. You know, talk to someone back channel at the end of the day, whatever you need to do to kind of vent. But, you know, I think you always have to have that level of respect, again, regardless of how they're talking to you, what you know, and then end of the day, I did feel like the bigger person because I didn't react. Mm. I didn't take the bait. I didn't, you know, there's times I got into screaming matches outside of health and say, or outside of medical, but, you know, I would say inside, like I never approach that. And so that would, I would say that's where I am today is when I can maintain my composure and I'm like, okay, yeah, they're probably just having a real bad day today, you know, and we'll try again tomorrow, you know? And so.
Another Carnegie principle is to be sympathetic with the other person's ideas and desires.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a great deal of that in you, that you're willing to do that. Yeah. And it, I see respect and I see empathy. And I also see this craving to learn and not a fear of like, okay, I don't know that, but I'd like to know something. Yeah. Let's get that.
I will be the first to throw my hand up and say, I don't know this, but I want to learn. You know, and I think even in today's rapidly changing technology, I've started taking courses on how to code for basic AI. You know, I am not a software coder at all, but now I understand these key terminologies and I'm like, whoa, like they just said this and I know what this means, you know, whether I pursue any software, you know, I'd say coding, that's for future John to decide. But I think, you know, I do want to learn. I want to be able to connect the dots. I personally, the fire department taught me not to get tunnel vision. You know, when you're responding to an emergency, don't just focus on this one aspect. You have to look at everything around you. You know, what other hazards or what other impacts could, you know, change the course of this incident. And so I think I apply that to learning. I want to be able to connect the dots of any company I work at. I want to understand, you know, how does the marketing and communication department support these other teams? How does sales support these teams? You know, because that's where you can also start finding some of the roadblocks, because you're going to have one leader who's like, nah, this isn't, you know, on my agenda. You know, this is going to impact us and we're not going to do that. Versus one is like, okay, this is blocking both of our departments. Let's kind of break down these barriers here. And, you know, what can we do?
How valuable is it for the safety professional, not just to be work to be an expert in their area, but to take time to understand marketing, finance, sales, operations? How vital has that been to you to expand to say, I got to look at the whole picture? It goes back to almost to the 360 vision, but how, because a lot of folks really hurt themselves because they're one horse show and they said, but it's safety. It's important. Yeah. But everybody says that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great topic. You know, I think I hate to say it, a lot of it comes down to collaboration, because again, if we're not going to work together, and if I go into a meeting being like, oh, I know that we're going to get into, you know, a heated argument because we've done this in the past and nothing's changed, and now we're just going to continue this, you know, this cycle of this is how we do things. Taking that step back, understanding, I think, the various businesses that make up your broader organization, you can then put that together as a safety professional. And what that's actually done for me is it's opened more doors. I've been invited to support other projects that are outside of my scope of work, but it's because I've been able to say, oh, I understand what this means, or I have a vague understanding, but I know someone who can help you on here. So let me kind of project manage this right here from the safety perspective, and I'll make sure you get the support you need.
Which what I'm hearing is you've also found ways to ingrain safety into other parts of the business where it may not have existed as deep previously, which is also a win for safety.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, I think we have a duty as safety professionals to not be secretive. That is the one thing that'll actually, I think, rub me the wrong way is when people are like, oh, this is confidential. We can't talk about this. And the first thing I will always say back is safety is not confidential. Yes, we may need to get our lawyers involved to clear some things before we release something or, you know, share documents. But, you know, I think a lot of it is, again, it's really understanding the foundation that they're working off of. What knowledge and insights do they have into, you know, their specific roles? And again, how do we help further support them? So if I can provide that, I think that background of what a total recordable incident rate is and how do we use this lagging indicator and why do we care so much about this, you know, this metric specifically, they pick that up. They listen because they want to use that same information in their meetings with their executives. And I've heard some of my colleagues who didn't really have safety in I would say their role start dropping some of those key terminology, you know, experience modification rate or, you know, TRIR, you know, when talking about some of these things. And I'm like, wow, you know, they really did take away from this. That's great. That's what we need them to do. And what I think that's done is that's shown them that there is a stakeholder or a resource they can rely on when they need that information. So again, we may not talk for 6 months, but they know they can come back to me at any point and I'll be like, oh yeah, let me help try to figure this out for you.
Did you hear that phrase too? Let me help.
Absolutely.
What a spirit. Is it true that at one point in your life, you were helping to oversee the safety of archaeologist?
Yes.
Was that Indiana Jones you were doing that for?
I wish. That was the power generation company.
How did you do safety for archaeologists?
Yeah, no. You
drop a rock on their foot or something? I mean,
well, and I think I was probably more so looking for a reason to get out of like being in the office, and because the archaeologist fell under my purview. And I was like, once I found out, I was like, I definitely need to go with you guys out to the field. And they were some of the greatest team members ever. You know, and so first thing I did, why do we have archaeologists at a power generation company? And they said, we are here because we have 260 miles of transmission lines, and these go across private property. So every time we go onto someone's property, we have to go do an archaeological dig to see if there was any like Native American artifacts in the ground. And I was very fortunate enough to go out there when they did find some things. And, you know, it was a great experience. So as a safety professional, first things that came to mind, the exposure to like, you know, insects or plants, you know, there was times that they had to crawl through brush to get to some of these locations because they are not in the there's no easy access to, you know, again, when you're talking about a transmission line along a riverbank, you know, with overgrowth. So those were some of the things that they would face. But there was ergonomics, squatting, you know, static positions, you know. And so, again, have y'all considered like, you know, the fatigue mats or, you know, is there anything you can do for padding on your knees? Or, you know, one had a cut one time and arm was bleeding and it was a superficial cut. But my recommendation was, okay, even though this is minor to you, report it, because if you don't, and three months later you have a really bad infection, there's no documentation of it. So a lot of it was that, okay, tell me what you're doing, you know, let's understand this, and then you know, what can we do to make this a little safer for you? Like, let's get your input. If this doesn't work, let's try something else. The one thing I do have to say about the archaeologist, they were digging. I saw someone pull something out of the ground once, stick it straight in his mouth. Pulled it
out.
Yeah. And I was like, what is that? And he's like, oh, that was a piece of bone. And I was like, okay, so future, like, let's not do that. You know, but that is how they did their jobs. You know, that's what they did in the field. And I'm sure that was probably something that was taught to, you know, him, you know, when he was starting out too. But, you know, and again, it was fascinating to watch all this happen. And then they took all those artifacts and they put them back in the hole and buried it. They didn't turn it in because they would have to pay to have it itemized and categorized. So as long as they didn't disturb it more than they had, they would just rebury it. And
you have such a fascinating background and history, and you know, from one end of the spectrum to the next. But everything that you've described and that you've been through, there's been some element of safety and health connected to every single one. Thinking about all of that, What advice would you give to someone who's just newly coming into the safety world?
Be curious. Be curious, because that is what's going to get you asking those questions. If you just go in and say, I know this, you're not going to ask any questions. That is why I love supporting all of my teams, because I ask those questions. Tell me about your role. Tell me what you do. You know, again, that's how I find what I consider fascinating people, because, you know, I work in health and safety and, you know, what do you see? And, okay, we can have those stories, but I'm also interested in their stories too. You know, again, I consider them the SMEs for what they do. So understanding it, you know, asking those questions, you know, and open-ended questions, not in a, you know, like a, like you're challenging them type of way. Like, you truly do want to learn this and learn about them. You know, I think to be able to make that connection. And, you know, and then I think once you're able to kind of master that, then you can start saying, oh, well, you know, hey, maybe I can help you out on this. And that's where you start really, I think, expanding part of your scope as a health and safety professional.
So what we've been hearing here, and unfortunately our time is about done, is, John, you have approached things with a respect for people, with an a spirit of awe and curiosity, and that has opened up your ability to make these connections, and people feel safe around you. By and large, you don't make people feel threatened, yet you get things done to help them to do the things that they should do. You're arousing the other person an eager want.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for taking your time to come share these insights with all these listeners today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Fantastic, John. Thank you so much.
John was a very multifaceted person with a multifaceted background. What was just a gain that you got from this conversation?
Yeah, wow. I mean, you know, his experiences are something else. You know, one of the biggest takeaways that I took away from his conversation was really to just be curious and ask questions, and then to follow up on that, the extreme importance of collaboration, no matter where you are or what you're doing.
When I think of him as a safety person, I think of him as being a safe safety person. Safe because he's not going to kind of come in and try to upset the apple cart right away. He's going to ask questions. He's going to approach with a spirit of respect, kindness, firmness, of course. But just say, we're here to learn. I'd like to understand your perspective. And when our professionals that listen to this will work to that, it will make they will be welcome in any meetings. And John set a real example for that.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast produced in partnership by Dale Carnegie and BCSP, with your hosts, Dale Carnegie Master Trainer Merle Heckman and Shelley Baber, EHS Director of Electrical Engineering Services and Systems Division at Eaton. Executive produced by Nathan Wilson, produced by Joel Burgai, directed by Giachi Liu, edited by Jared Griot and Kyla Anderson. Editorial support from Brandon Mohawked. Social media support from Braylon Morgan and Crystal Keithley. Consulting producers are Colin Brown and Mark Sullivan. To have new episodes delivered directly to you, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you'd like to share your story of a safety leadership challenge you've faced, email us at info@mybigsafetychallenge.com. See you next time.